There's quite a lot of people here who I appreciate don't know who we are, although you're probably sick to death of hearing about us. Because I remember when we joined Ashwood many years ago, they'd talk about these people who weren't around anymore, and it was kind of like before our time. I would get so sick of hearing these names. So I do apologise. But when I'm Lucy, I was like, we're Neil and Lucy. I'm Lucy, this is Neil. We've got three children. Matilda, who's dressed up as Minnie Mouse, I couldn't be bothered to battle it. Eden, who's got red hair, is how we identify him in Albania. That doesn't work so well here, especially in this church, because there's several children with red hair. And Timmy, who's Timmy? I didn't say he wasn't wonderful, I just said he's Timmy. That's all he needs. We've been living in Albania since April the 12th, 2009, at least me and the children have. Neil travelled over with Owen a few days before that, and they drove over to Albania. So we've been living there just over 2.5 years. And we've spent a lot of time language learning, because it is the most ridiculous language to learn in the world. And the Albanians proudly tell you that it's second only to Chinese in difficulty to learn. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, or whether they're just proud of that for the rest of us, but it feels like that. And there's lots of grammar. And my excuse is that we didn't learn grammar at school, so I just don't understand English grammar before we even go on to Albanian grammar. And I don't know what a conjunction is. I don't know what the definite and indefinite is, and I don't understand any of it. I can just about manage past, present and future. That's it. So we're still learning. There should be a video running at some point, just with some pictures of what we're doing. In April last year, I came over here in March with Matilda and introduced you all to our plan for Barima, which is a centre in the Caneta, which is right where we live. The Caneta is one of the poorest areas of Albania. It's right on the edge of the city of Durrës, which is where we live. And there's approximately 50,000 people live in this area. It's improving anyway. And they now have digital TV fixed throughout most areas of the Caneta. Not that people can afford to watch or buy digital TV, but they have digital TV. But we don't have running water or electricity, solid electricity supply. But if we did have, we could then watch the digital TV if we could afford to buy it. But it shows you the difference between a private enterprise and a government-led enterprise. But we do have a brand new road going through the Caneta, which is lovely, because as we walk to the Barima, no longer do we just have to walk totally in mud. We now have a bit of concrete or asphalt to walk on, which is saves our willies a little bit. Anyway, very, very, very amazingly and graciously and abundantly you have given to Barima. So just briefly, what we do there. We're open every day, Monday to Friday. And because of the school system, the children have to go to school in shifts because the schools are oversubscribed. So Eden and Timmy's school was built for 800, but in 2010 there were 1,400 children enrolled at that school. So you can see there's a bit of difference between 800 and 1,400. So in the morning, children go who are aged 12 to 14, and they go from 8, I think, until 12:30 or 1, depending on the year they're in. And then younger children from 6 or 7 to 11 go in the afternoon from 1 till 5. If it rains, they sometimes finish at 4. And if we're feeling a bit fed up or it's cold, we might finish at 4:30. So it's fairly flexible on timings. And we've gone to pick the children up from school, and they've been stood there, the only child left, because the stupid foreigners didn't know that the schools were going to finish early because it's raining. But lots of teachers think that's great. And we often pass Eden and Timmy's, well, Eden's teacher in particular, as we go to take the boys to school. We drop them off, and as I'm walking home, I quite often see Eden's teacher walk into school. I think, my child's already at school, and you're just walking there. And the teachers often come out of school before the kids as well. So teaching in Albania is a good career move. There's no extra work, no marking, no nothing. But it means that we can run different age sessions at the centre. So in the morning, we run sessions for the younger children aged. We now go from 5 to 11. We open Monday to Friday. Monday, we start off with prayer, and then we run Gazoo, Albania. It's a great name, isn't it? Gazoo. Isn't it a good idea, that? I don't know where I got that great idea from. But it actually works superbly in Albania, because the word for kind of cheers or celebration or like joy is gazua. So we go gazoo, and the kids kind of still call it gazua sometimes. But it's got that sense of cheers and joy and enjoy this and celebrate. And we have, we had to say to some of the kids they couldn't come for the last couple of sessions because we just didn't have room for them. They were sat on each other's knees, they were sat wherever they could, were stood up, and the room was just jam-packed full of kids, which was amazing to see. And they come, Dave and Christine, I'll tell you, they come and wait at the gate from 8:30, and we don't open till 9:30. We say to them, you can't, we don't open another hour, and they're like, we'll just wait here to make sure we can come in. Tuesdays, at present, we don't have an activity on a Tuesday, so we have a team meeting. On Wednesdays, we do English, or I do English. Try and teach the children English, which mainly involves very, very simple things. Thursdays we do an art club, because the kids only go to school for 4 hours. They don't get really any opportunity to do extra things such as art or creativity. And because of the systems that were in place before, school is very, very structured. So there's not a lot of creativity within teaching methods. It tends to be the teacher standing up and saying, this is what you need to learn. Learn it, open your books, read. And then they sit down or go and talk to their friends. So to have creativity in the art classes is something the kids just love. And even, we just have been doing really simple things. So circles and drawing the faces, and there's some of those at the back, drawing themselves on a piece of card. We gave them some card that somebody had given us, some little postcard-sized cards. And they just wanted to draw on it. And because we said they could draw more than one piece of paper, they were like, oh, can I really? And they sat for an hour just drawing on these pieces of card, just amazed. And they went, can we get to take it home with us? And I was like, yes, you can take it home because I really don't want those pieces of card. And it was like you'd given them a treasure and it was just a piece of card. So it's amazing, their gratitude. And on a Friday, we have an open session where we have Sam Walker's old PlayStation, we have our old Wii, and we have board games, and the kids love it. Snap is a personal favourite, and we have the kids fighting over who's going to get to come and play Snap with you. Just a pack of cards and drafts they really enjoy, and dominoes. So it's very simple things to us, but we live in a country where there aren't toy shops. Yesterday we took our kids to Toys R Us. And it's like, Eden was so excited. He's like, at last, I get to go to Toys R Us. I can't wait. We get to go there at last. And I just went to Neil, I can't really cope with this because there's too much. How do you choose what, you know? And kids are like, oh, I really like this. Oh, I want one of those. Oh, look at this, mummy. And it's like, I'm no wiser now than I was when I walked in as to what they really want, because there's just too much. we have one toy shop in Durrow City, and it's much smaller than, it's probably half the size of Boys, if that, isn't it? So kids at the centre, whatever we give to them, it's a totally different world, and they're just so grateful for really simple things. In the afternoon, we run the programs for the teenagers. So Monday, we run Gazoo again, but we have it more of a kind of an alpha style. We have the kids sitting around. We have snacks for them. We have drinks, and we chat and discuss. We're getting them more to read their Bibles and pray and think about what the theme means to them. On a Tuesday, we have an open session. On a Wednesday, I do English again with them. Again, very basic standard. Not very keen to learn beyond colours and numbers. But a thing that's opened up as well is that the kids have started to bring their English homework in from school and asked me to help them with it. I'm very keen to say to them, I'll help you. I won't do it for you. I'll help you with it. But that's great for my Albanian as well, because I'm like going, what does that mean? Because I don't know how to say some of the words in Albanian. And then a Thursday, I've been running a girls' group. It's a small enterprise project, because Albania is a very, very male-dominated society. So the people who do know us will go, oh, Lou's really comfortable up there, it's quite normal for her. But I've been sat here and I've been going, God, I didn't realise how much I've changed, because I'm so nervous standing in front of you all, because this isn't normal for me anymore. This isn't who I am anymore, really, because I'm not allowed to speak in church. I'm not allowed to stand at the front of church, or to preach, or to do, even within a small group of women I could lead, but nothing more. So I do feel quite out of my depth this morning, so I'm a bit nervous, sorry about that. But for girls growing up, it's quite common, especially in the Caneta, because they've got a village mentality, for girls 14, 15 to become married or to have kind of arranged marriages. And the expectation is then they will get married and they will have children and they will look after their larger family. So the younger son's duty is to look after his parents. And so the girl, was like, don't marry the youngest son. The girl who marries the youngest son automatically takes on the responsibility of looking after her in-laws and living with the in-laws as well. So our kind of hope is to give these girls some value beyond just being seen as this role. And there's nothing wrong with being a homemaker, being a mum, looking after your house. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's to say, actually, who you are is valuable. You aren't just there for everybody else. You're there because you're precious. And so we've made some jewellery and some bags, and just taking time really with the girls to give them a skill, really basic skill, mainly to sit with them and to chat with them and to talk about how their life is. And so this is a horrible plug, but we do have some jewellery for sale. It's only £1, £1.50. Whatever we make, I'm going to give to the girls. And they're so excited by that, because £1 to them is a huge amount. And so if I can give them a few pounds or a few euros, it doesn't just say, oh, here's some money, go and spend it. Most likely it will be taken into the household to pay for food and stuff. But it says not only to them, but to their families, these girls are capable of doing things and achieving things. They're capable of making something and having a value. Not just earning money, but actually they have skills. And it's been lovely to sit and make these things with them. So if you would like to look at those, we'd be really grateful. And Neil's also helps out on a Friday at another centre for kids who are from particularly poor families, families with difficulties. Lots of Albanians travel abroad as soon as they can manage to, or by whatever means they can manage to get out of the country, because they don't have freedom to travel. But that means lots of the children come from one parent families, because their dad is, or their mum is, in another country. And so Neil works with boys, mainly boys, isn't it? Doing a football project at another centre for these kids. And how many did you have? You worked with 50 kids in two sessions, which doing football training with them was quite interesting, I think. But we try and then on a Friday night we do a teen Bible study with another church. We try to, that's our programme at Barima, and then on top of that we do home visits, we take the kids to school, we look after the family, we do just your normal things, which I don't think are interesting, but you might. But I hope that's giving you a bit of an insight. I know it's only very scatty and over the broad view, but we really feel that Ashwood is a part of it, and we've always said that. And we've always felt such a strong link to the church here. And other people around us go, it's amazing, your church, like these people who keep coming to visit, it's amazing, like, how involved your church is with you, because it's just not normal for other missionaries. And we say, yeah. And we've kind of, we don't take it for granted, but we just count it as normal that we're still a part of you and you're still a part of us, kind of thing. And I think Janet said as well, our life does have a touch of Ashwood in it. It really is us doing what we did here, but doing it in Albania, which adds complications, but also brings the fun of going to the beach in the summer and not going, oh, what should we do with the kids? It's raining. Just let's go to the beach again. So we would really, I mean, we can't say enough how grateful we are. And it is when you just go, I can't tell you how much you all mean to us. Because it can be really lonely there, and it can be really difficult because it is us, you know. And we can't just nip, well, I can't just nip out for coffee because I'm not allowed to. Neil can. And you can't just sit and chat to your friends, because whatever you chat about, you have to do it in Albanian and translate it. And this year for me has been a really hard year because I've just felt so lonely and isolated. And it's like Neil said, he said, yeah, but you just remember back to when we were last there and how welcomed we were and how loved we are. And seriously, it is the only thing that gets you through the day quite often. The number of times I've said to Neil, that's it, I'm packing my bags. He's going, are you? Okay. I'll come back in an hour and you won't have done it. So thank you so much. And like the Barima Centre, if you saw those kids, how excited they are, how amazed they are that anybody's done this. And the conversations we have with the shopkeepers, with the parents, with the school teachers, who say, why are you here? What do you do? What are you doing here? Why, you know, because everybody wants to get to England. That's their aim, to get abroad somewhere and get a better way of life. For us to go to Albania is, why would you do that? And when we say why we're there, and we tell them about the people who've paid for the centre and given for them to have the activities we have, they're just amazed. So thank you from all those little kids, all those bigger kids, thank you so much, because you have literally changed their lives. And we hope not just for now, but for the future as well. So on with the preach. We're going to turn to the Bible. That's always a good place to start. And Owen.
Right, so let's start with Psalm 78, thanks Nick, 52 to 55. So, but he brought his people out like a flock. He led them like sheep through the wilderness. He guided them safely, so they were unafraid. But the sea engulfed their enemies. And so he brought them to the border of his holy land, to the hill country his right hand had taken. He drove out nations before them and allotted their lands to them as an inheritance. He settled the tribes of Israel in their homes.
Micah chapter 5, verse 4. He will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they will live securely. For then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth, and he will be their peace.
Isaiah 4:13. You who bring good news to Zion, go up on a high mountain. You who bring good news to Jerusalem, lift up your voice with a shout. Lift it up, do not be afraid. Say to the towns of Judah, here is your God. See, the sovereign Lord comes with power. He rules with a mighty arm. See, his reward is with him, and his recompense accompanies him. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in their arms, in his arms, and carries them close to his heart. He gently those who have done.
Ezekiel 34:11-16. For this is what the Sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements in the land. I will tend them in a good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. There they will lie down in a good grazing land, and there they will feed in rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the Sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. But the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice.
John chapter 10, verses 14 and 15. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep.
I'm reading a psalm. Perhaps you'd like to join with me with the first line. You will know it. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Micah 5:2. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will be your shepherd of my people Israel.
And you'll recognize him by this sign. You will find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth lying in a manger. Suddenly the angel was joined by a vast host of others, the armies of heaven, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and peace on earth to those whom God is pleased, with whom God is pleased. When the angels had returned to heaven, the shepherds said to each other, Let's go to Bethlehem. Let's see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about. They hurried to the village and found Mary and Joseph, and there was a baby lying in the manger. After seeing him, the shepherds told everyone what had happened and what the Lord had said to them about this child. All who heard the shepherd's story were astonished. But Mary kept these things in her heart and thought about them often. The shepherds went back to their flocks, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen. It was just as the angel had told them.
Been living a simple life. It's not much that complicated in our life. Everything's normal. Well, it was until a few weeks ago. Everything just changed. You know how one thing turns your world upside down? We'd just been getting along as best we could. I mean, it's hard sometimes. There's 8 of us in our house. There's me and the 5 kids. And then there's My husband's mother and father, Jushi and Jusha. And it's been hard. It's 5 years now since my husband died, and without him there, there is that person missing. There is that change in all of our lives, really. I do my best, but I'd never realised all the responsibility that he took on, the way he looked after us, the way he cared for us. And then, suddenly, it was all down to me. I have to look after Jushi and Jusha. Yeah, that's fine. But the kids, making sure there's food for them. Making sure they've got the clothes that will see them through the season. Making sure they get to school on time. Well, that's always a bit of a challenge with the five of them. And even that, now I have to think about how we pay for the books for school. It doesn't seem much, £5, for their education. I know that. I know it's not that much. But with five children, I just, year after year, I don't know how to pay it. I don't know how to get £5 for each child. And when the little one, Bessie, started school this year, we just didn't have the money. I just didn't know what we'd do. So I went to the director of the school and I explained the situation to him, and he said, we'll work something out. And he was so good. He was so kind to us. And people are to widows. And I remember I used to look at widows in the village, and you'd do your best when you had some extra bread or something, you'd help them out. But now when it's you, it's hard to ask. It's hard to admit that you can't provide for your own family. It was like my son this summer. I was so proud of him. But I felt such a failure. He's only 14, and every morning he'd get up about 7 and he'd get on his bike and he met with his cousins and they'd ride to the beach. And on the back of the bikes they had a box, and in it they'd got cans of pop and some cigarettes and some cards. And all day long they walked up and down that beach, trying to sell the drinks, trying to get rid of the cards or the cigarettes. I mean, they didn't make hardly anything. 10 pence here, 5 pence there. But every day he did it, he stuck to it. Even when other people on the beach laughed at them and pushed them away, they still walked up and down that beach to make the money. And he'd come home, his arms were red raw from the sun. And he was tired out, having worked all day in that sun, just sitting there and trying to sell what he could. But he did it, and it gave us the money for the books for school this year. I don't know what we'd have done if he hadn't been willing to do that. I don't mean to sound like I'm moaning, because I'm not. I'm so proud of my children. I'm so proud of our family. And I'm so, so grateful. We've got 3 sheep, you see. With them, we've got wool to keep, to knit and to make socks and gloves for the winter. We've got leather to make the kids some shoes. We've got meat and we've got milk. And without those sheep, I don't know what we'd have done. They're so precious. And this year, oh, it was wonderful this year. We got 2 lambs. Oh, one of them was up and running as soon as it could, but the other one was a weak little thing. And you know when that's your life, sat there with hardly any life in it, gives you a bit of a panic. So I took it and I put it under my jacket and I carried it round. Every hour I'd get a bit of milk onto the teaspoon and try and feed it. Little by little it'd lap at this milk. It wasn't that keen at first. But soon it got the taste for it, and it would take a bit more and take a bit more, and I could feed it more regularly, and I could see it as I held it and I carried it. I could see it getting stronger and stronger. And it'd just sit there, cuddled, looking at you, and I tried to put it on the floor, but it was having none of it. It wanted to stay safe to me. It did make cooking quite interesting, I can tell you. I nearly dropped it in there a couple of times. But it was a beautiful little lamb. So precious. They both are. In fact, all the sheep are. It's a bit crazy, really. They're like part of the family. We love them. They're just everything to us. They're not just sheep. They are our all. They're everything. And so it's our pleasure, really, to look after them like that, to hold them. And it was so amazing the day when I put her down and she ran off with her sister, excited about the wider world, no longer just needing to be held, but looking around her at all else there was in the world, wanting to explore. Did make looking after them a little bit more interesting. A bit more of a challenge, having these two youngsters hopping off around the place. And that's changed. I mean, I remember the day when there was grass all over here. We kids could go and play in the fields and you'd look out of your house and there was grass around. But now it's just houses everywhere. All over the place there's houses. There's not a patch of grass. Thing is, it's like the dust in the summer. All these houses and all this dust from the roads where the kids are running about. And my house is a nightmare to clean. All day long, I'm cleaning and mopping and brushing. And then in the winter comes the mud. Oh, I don't know which is worse. Mud you have to scrub out. And the kids don't care. I mean, they take the shoes off at the door. But then they're still running and they've got mud on the back of their trousers. And they've fallen in the mud and they've been playing in it. And it's just cleaning the house all the time. Oh, I can't stand cleaning my house. But with Jusha there looking on, even with her failing eyesight, she seems to see the specks of dust that I've missed and point them out. And they're lovely, Jushi and Jusha, but it is quite hard work sometimes. This winter, we didn't know that Jushi would make it. He got pneumonia, and we took him to the clinic, and we went to see the doctor, and he was really lovely. And he listened to him, and he's told us he'd got pneumonia, and he wrote out a prescription. But the thing was, we couldn't afford the medicine. There was no way we could afford that. So we took him home and we wrapped him up. And the kids gave me their blankets and we put those on Jushi. And then they went out with a wheelbarrow, bless them. And they went all over the village looking for bits of wood. They went in bins. They went in people's yards. They went looking wherever they could. Any scrap of wood, a stick this big or a plank this big. They came and they brought it home. And we managed to keep the house warm enough. And day by day, I'd sit with Jushi and feed him some soup and just trying to get him to eat a bit and to help him as he coughed and he had his fever. And it was amazing to see him get better bit by bit. But poor Jusha, as she watched, the sorrow in her eyes made me realise how precious they are and how precious life is. See, she's already lost three children, and that's more than anybody could bear. I can't stand to think of anything happening to my children. But to see Jushi ill, and to think that she was going to be on her own as well, just the sadness in her eyes, and the lack of hope, the despair. Oh, it was terrible. Anyway, he's better now, and they help out a bit around the house where they can, and chat to the kids and look at their homework and show them some interest. And while they're at home, I go out and look after the sheep. And so now, with all these buildings around, we have to go to the edge of the village and try and find what bits of grass we can there. And those sheep. It's amazing sometimes. I'll meet up with somebody and we'll be chatting. And I've got my three sheep and maybe they've got another couple of sheep. And the sheep will just start wandering around and eating the grass that they can find. And you know what? As soon as I call to them, they follow me. When my time's up having a chat, I'll say, come on. And on they come. It's like they know my voice. It's like they listen and they understand my voice. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, they had pens that they'd keep the sheep in. And the sheep would stay in the pens and the shepherd would go out and watch them in the pen and take care of them in the pens. And he'd talk to them and then there was no worry about them knowing his voice. But now that they're free to wander, it's amazing they still do the same thing. I might be giving them too much praise, to be honest. Every now and then, they don't come running at all. One of them will go wandering off, seeing some grass that's much greener, much tastier looking, or off with the other shepherd who looks like a better deal than us. And I've got my all on getting him to come back. Come on, come on, come on. on, and off they wander. Oh, I trot for miles some days trying to keep up with those sheep. Don't know they're born. They don't. I give them everything. We look after, I told you, they're like part of the family. We love them. I take care of them. We all do. The kids are great with them. But sometimes, just a bit of grass somewhere else looks more tempting. It's amazing, sheep. Anyway, back to the original change of situation. You see, my son had been looking after the sheep because I'd been busy that day and I'd not been able to get the sheep out. And so he took them off, and he does that every now and then, and he meets up with his cousins or his friends, and they'll sit and they'll chat on the field, and he's only 7, but he's ever such a good lad. And he tries his best at school, and his teacher sometimes complains about him. She says he's not very good at maths. She says he's not very good at writing, to be honest. But we try and encourage him. He tries. He's a real trier. But that day, he came home, and he'd got all these fanciful stories like you never could imagine. The things he told us, the things he'd seen and the things he'd done. I mean, I was a bit worried at first because he'd said he'd gone into the city, and we don't tend to go into the city because the people in the city don't really like us from the village. They say we look funny and we smell funny and we're odd the way we do things. But he said he'd been into the city because some angels had turned up and told him that he was invited to go and see a king. I mean, like I say, we're just a simple family struggling to get along. To think you've got an invite from a king. So I asked him about this king, and he told me it wasn't a king like I'd expect. That no, Mum, there wasn't a palace suddenly appeared in the city. It was a baby in this house that was even rougher than ours. And then I was kind of thinking, what on earth has he been up to tonight? But the thing was, there was something about him that changed. There was something about him that you couldn't say was the same as he'd went out that night. And it didn't just last for that day. And the story didn't change as he told other people. And he wasn't shy about doing that, I'll tell you. The same story. And the change in him, that this little boy had been invited by a king. That this little boy had found a baby that changed his life. That this little boy had been valued enough to be invited. That it wasn't down to what he could do or how he looked or where he was in the family line. But he was invited. He was valued. He changed. He was loved by somebody beyond our family. And as he told us, we began to feel something different as well. I mean, I didn't get to see this baby in face myself, but it was like I had. As he told you the story about this king, and he said these angels had invited him, it was like I'd seen the baby myself. It was like this sense of love, this sense of purpose that actually all these struggles in life and all these challenges and all the stress didn't really matter. There was something more, something bigger, something to hold on to, something to give us hope. And that changed. That changed us all. A baby, a child, a king. Signs from an angel inviting him and inviting you and inviting me. We've heard the story, we know the story. But how often do we go back and see the wonder of it? How often do we go back and want to be changed? And understand that you are invited. You have been called by the angels. You are the one that God said, come, see this baby. In your world, things might be different. Lots of that is taken from the people we live with and the places we live. And life here is different, but the need for a shepherd, the need for the Saviour is no less. The need to know that shepherd holding you in his arms. The need to listen for the voice of that shepherd calling to you this Christmas time and saying, I've got a message for you that is going to not just change your life, but change your world and change the world around you. That doesn't change. The story might be familiar, but this year, just listen out. Because there's a new story for each of us, and I believe that so strongly. That there's a shepherd wanting to hold his sheep. There's a shepherd wanting to lead us beside the still waters. No matter how dark the night, no matter how big the economic crisis, there's a shepherd who is saying, walk beside me, because I will carry you. I will feed you. I will tend you. And a shepherd isn't just a lowly job. It isn't just for the weakest and the lowest. Now, there's lots of references in the Bible where shepherding referred to a king. It's a position of power. It's a position of leadership. It's a position of authority. And Jesus isn't just the lowest of the low, although he came in that form. God is the God of all heaven, the creator of the earth. And it is that God that invites us to come to the stable, to listen to the shepherd, and to meet once again with the Saviour.